This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love. And we're here to help. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
We are back in the studio. Happy Tuesday. We're back from a whirlwind trip to Germany and Belgium. We had 2 days on each track.
Amazing. It was so fantastic. 2 days. We've never done 2 days on
each
track
before. We haven't ever done 2 days back to back on
each
track.
Much longer trip.
Yeah.
Really, really great, because every time I was on track, I think, oh yeah, we've got tomorrow too.
Yes. And
that's
the weather
nice.
Worked with us. It started raining the last half of the last track day, which is fine. So some people did wet laps. Most people, including Paul and I, had already blown through all of our paid for laps and then some. So we were like, you know what? We should really be done because the wallet is burning. But you can actually do more of these trips. We have our Everyday Driver trip coming up Father's Day weekend in the middle of June. But there's still space available. HookedOnDriving.com, right there on the homepage. We're taking a trip again in October, 2 days on Spa, 1 day on the ring. You could go with us then.
We drove the AC Schnitzer M3 Touring, known as the AC S3 Sport. We've got a test drive coming. Thanks to RSR for lending us that. It was a whirlwind test drive because we didn't have too much time, but we did get to sample a few top speed runs.
There was Autobahn driving. There was,
When it's on the Autobahn, we can disclose our speeds. I was really happy to say it was 256 kilometers an hour in the wet, and the car was rock solid.
The last time I looked, I was passing the high 260s, and then I took my foot out of it a moment later.
270.
So I was roughly 270, which is about 160 miles an hour in this big wagon. It's forbidden fruit all over the place. Now, the problem is, it is quite beaver-teefed.
It is, but the Euro tags help.
The Euro tags do help. That's interesting to actually see that in person and realize that those help. It has extra little snorty bits in the bonnet that actually help as well. This is a total forbidden fruit car because we don't get the M3 Touring and we don't get AC Schnitzer stuff. So it's all the stuff we can have. And that's kind of what the test drive's about. It's on road talking about this thing and should it be here.
I decided I would forego my distaste for the beaver teeth to own that thing. And I think every car enthusiast would. BMW, please bring the M3 Touring to North America. That's all you have to do. And, you know, I wonder about car manufacturers who have gotten away from making manual transmissions because there is a demand. It's not as high as it was, but I wonder if bringing wagons and manual transmissions back to North America would actually be a business case. Speaking of which, the Ferrari 12-cylinder has been announced.
Is Ferrari even trying? They're going. Here's why I say that. They're going to the Maserati school of naming conventions.
They have done so for a long time.
Yes.
The model this replaces was called the 812 Super Fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this one should be faster, but the last one was also 12-cylinder, and you just named it the 12-cylinder. They named their 50th anniversary car the Enzo.
Uh-huh, yes.
And then the Ferrari, the Ferrari.
The Ferrari, the 60th. Ferrari is one of the best ever. That was what I really like. Oh, so the Maserati school of naming, the Ferrari.
Look,
Ferrari. Yeah, got it.
Every car company has their Achilles heel when it comes to building cars. Porsche's is horns. The horns are terrible.
Okay.
But that's not why Porsche builds cars.
True.
But then Ferraris really have trouble thinking of cool names. The Roma is cool. I'll even take Portofino. That's kind of cool. A multi-digit alphanumeric combination.
Puro Sangue.
Like, Puro Sangue is
whatever.
A little contrived, but then the 12 cylinder. It's an entirely new all-aluminum chassis with a 20 millimeter shorter wheelbase than that old turd, the 812 Superfast.
Yeah, that one that nobody liked and could never go fast in spite of the name. No, that's not right. Actually, it was super fast. That's true. Yeah.
It has a naturally aspirated V12, making approximately 819 horsepower, 500 pound-feet of torque, and has a 9,500 RPM red line. It also has an 8-speed DCT.
So hang on, is this where we're going? What I'm wondering about is, are these the engines that are going to survive to eat the gasoline?
I think so.
And all of the things that are currently being driven by little 4-cylinder turbos may as well just be electric.
If they introduced a manual transmission on this car...
Well, yeah, now you really are dreaming.
People would beat their way back to Ferrari.
People with exceptionally large wallets.
People trading in those dorky old 812 Superfasts. Can't get rid of them fast enough for the 12-cylinder.
How many people with Ferrari money can drive a manual? I'm asking a genuine question. I mean, honestly.
That's a good question.
How many people that would actually buy a Ferrari could even, let alone if they'd want one, could they actually drive one at this point?
It's got active aero, but Ferrari is also introducing brake-by-wire, which does not give me high hopes.
Yeah, I agree.
And if you feel the need to read something nauseating, I dare you to read the press release written by the Ferrari marketing department. Okay. And I quote, here's just a small sampling.
Please.
One of the objectives of the Ferrari 12-cylindri was to explore design languages only tangentially related to the car world. The front has thus lost certain signature elements, such as the elongated form of the headlights and the traditional grille shape, in favor of geometries and intersections innate to the car's design. Headlights are integrated into a single wraparound band from which the DRLs emerge like blades. End quote. And that was like the tame part.
But the other thing about that strikes me is, how do I put this? Not good. That's the nicest way I can think of to put it, is the fact that in other places, they are very publicly saying, well, this is a modern throwback to the Daytona, and you can see those design influences. So right. To say that it's only tangentially connected to cars and has this new thinking, I'm like, but you were looking at the Daytona.
Exactly.
So pick a lane.
This is episode 895. Number 900 is coming soon. That's on our calendar, 5 episodes away. So be sure you tune into that for our live stream then. And Beartooth registration opens this weekend. We've offered it to our patrons first and the Discord community.
When you hear Friday's podcast, the registration for the Beartooth Highway piece, that's Jackson Hole and Beartooth Highway in Wyoming, which we did that whole film on Best Road Ever there. That will be live on Friday. If there's spaces left, run, don't walk, because we fully expect this trip to sell out. It's going to be a really, really fun drive. In fact, it may just be the event I'm most looking forward to this year. It's not including some of our cool shoots. We have some cool shoots coming up, but that one's going to be great.
Well, Todd's going to bring a cool new car on that trip.
Oh, yes.
For listeners who are local to Utah this Saturday, May 11th, 2024, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., our friends at Complete Detail Solutions are hosting a car show featuring the range of Griot's Garage products. But you can get a sneak preview of Todd's new car.
The video is coming when I get my hands on it for real. Complete Detail Solutions is doing an awesome full PPF on this car because it will be taken and driven very, very much. But if you would like a sneak peek of this car that we have not shared it with anybody. So until the video comes out, it's going to be a surprise.
It's exciting.
But if you want to see it ahead of the video, you can come down. That is this coming Saturday, May 11th. So it'll be very cool.
The location is 654 West Fine Drive, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84119. Again, Saturday, May 11th, 2024, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Featuring Griot's Garage products and Todd's new car. We hope to see you there.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Spring cleaning is here. That means it's time to take that summer or performance car out of the garage and get it ready for driving season with upgraded brakes. PowerStop's Z26 Street Warrior Brake Upgrade Kit features drilled and slotted rotors that will keep your brake temperatures low while resisting rust. Included in that kit are carbon fiber ceramic pads that will give you durable, reliable stopping power without all that nasty brake dust.
Head to PowerStop.com and fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to find complete kits and components for your car. Join us and thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicles into a stopping powerhouse. PowerStop is brake upgrades made easy.
Today's Topic Tuesday comes from Adam W., who writes, asking, what is the difference between loyalty? Well, I guess a disloyalty, but he terms it as burying your head in the sand.
I would say that the better way for Adam to have phrased this would have been loyalty to a brand versus ignoring the changes that a brand goes through. Because it's not just burying your head in the sand. It's just what's happened here, Adam, is you've recognized the stuff that Paul and I have seen in the nearly, I can't believe I'm saying this, 2 decades we've been doing this show. When we started this show, certain brands had certain mystiques. Mm-hmm. And over the course of us doing this show, 17 plus years now, 10 years for this podcast, we have watched many of those brands completely change what they are known for. Most of them,
BMW.
I was going to say, BMW is still trading on being the ultimate driving machine, which was a marketing campaign from the 90s. Okay? They're still trading on that. And we think of them that way, but they have changed as a company, as has everybody. From a young age, he's been a car guy, and he got his license in the middle of Mazda's Zoom Zoom ad campaign. And even though he knows, intellectually he knows, that Mazda has made more and more vehicles to be mass market vehicles and less concerned with the zoom zoom they used to have in the 90s and early 2000s, He still thinks of them that way, in spite of the fact that many of the cars have left that thinking. Meanwhile, Ford was offering a performance vehicle at every price point. You and I beat on this when the podcast started.
We did, yeah.
10 years, that's how recently it was. 10 years ago, it was true.
Mm-hmm.
That they had, mm-hmm. like, starting with the Fiesta ST and going up to the Ford GT, they had, like, how much money would you like to spend with Ford? They had a performance car. He still thinks, if he went out and bought a brand new car, and he says he's not in that place, but he'd run to the Ford dealership looking for performance vehicles, only to discover they're not really there as much anymore.
Because of this, Ford had earned a lot of loyalty from Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this product range, feeling like they'd earned his dollars. He says, Toyota, a company that Adam has historically sworn up and down, will never get a red cent from him because of associations he had formed previously, has become one of the best places to go for a good enthusiast vehicle. They started out with the 5-seat crossover Plague by a Lexus.
This is Adam's many sins of Toyota.
Exactly. Adam will never forgive them for that. And he says,
for introducing the 5-seat crossover. I agree with that, Adam, totally.
Well, he's saying that I can thank Lexus for the existence of the Taos. I think the Taos existence is because of the Crosstrek and others. I don't think it's the Lexus egg. I don't think that's Volkswagen's response to that. I think it's certainly a market response, but the Ford Explorer Sport and the Crosstrek mainly, I think, is the market they're going after, because Crosstrek projects a certain image and Volkswagen's like, I want in on that and we can take ours to the beach
too. We can sell beanies as well.
It's not super off-roady, but who cares? Adam also says, Toyota spent most of his life building and assembling uninspiring, soulless appliances that rely on, in his opinion, an inflated reputation for reliability.
Ooh, fighting words. Okay, all right.
Them are fighting words. They are too risk-averse, apparently. Adam says, while this is generally a great business strategy, as an enthusiast, he wants to see company culture supporting passion projects, and Toyota generally doesn't do that by themselves because it's not endemic to their corporate culture, except that has changed.
Well, but the point he's making, though, is at the time that he thought Mazda was zoom zoom and Ford was enthusiast cars for everybody, this was the vibe he got from Toyota. But he recognizes, to your point, Paul, this did change.
Mm-hmm.
Akio Toyota shows up.
Changed dramatically.
With racing background and racing interest, and starts to worry about, let's have our cars have some fun to drive. I hate to say it this way, where's our zoom zoom, to Adam's point?
Mm.
And try to inject that, creates the GR sub-brand, goes so far as his racing name, Maurizio, is on the special edition super hopped up version.
The $50,000 Corolla is what you're looking for.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole other thing. So he said, look, he's not detracting from Toyota's now current cool partnerships with BMW and Subaru, but he's just sitting here going, shouldn't he give his money to companies that present themselves as not risk averse and more enthusiast interested, like Hyundai with the Elantra N, Honda with the Civic Si or Type R, the Mustang, the MX-5, the Boxster, etc., that he believes are companies that have genuine enthusiast cred that he just doesn't want to give to Toyota.
He says he's only got so much money, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to decide which company has earned it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay.
Is it more valuable to override his previous understanding of what Toyota is and support the practice they may very well be the only viable path forward for enthusiast vehicles? Ooh. I wonder what you mean when you say has earned it. And is it because it plays into not just enthusiasts and saying we have an enthusiast brand, but is it because of all the things that we discount as enthusiasts, like, oh, it was tuned on the ring. Range Rover tests their vehicles on the ring for anybody listening. The BMW X7 is tested on the ring. Does the X7 need to be tested on the ring
for any reason whatsoever? I know.
It needs to go fast in a straight line on roads near Munich and all over the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all it needs to do.
Starbucks and pick up the kids and I might get groceries
pretty
later.
Much.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But is it just high horsepower? Is it just bragging rights? Is it just vehicles, Adam, that you can take to Cars and Coffee? I hate to say it, you don't put on track. This is why Todd and I acquired Hooked on Driving, is because we've never had an outlet to say, look, and we constantly see it. Man, what amazing cars are in Europe. Hot, high horsepower, incredible handling, cars that whose limits far exceed most of the owner's abilities.
Yeah.
And here's these cars, they're puttering to Cars and Coffee, they're being shown off. And ultimately, it's these high-end cars that are designed specifically, Ferrari 12-cylindre, to extract money out of the wallets of the people who can afford them. That's all they're designed to do. That's it. Mm-hmm. I have come to this realization. Mm-hmm. And what's more, I've made peace with that realization.
Ooh, okay. All right.
Because that means high horsepower cars, amazing cars, and there's a lot of people who can afford those cars, and they will buy them, and they will continue to buy them. And that's why these cars are designed and built, because they're passionate by those companies, their projects. Mm-hmm. Designed partly because there is a noble cause in designing something beautiful and amazing and a technological masterpiece, but also it's expensive enough to make money and it pulls money out of the wallets of the people who can afford them. Mm-hmm. And both are noble causes, in my opinion. And so I say yes, for all those car manufacturers, continue to build these amazing sports cars. There is no reason that they will ever go away because of those two reasons.
Interesting. Adam, I'm gonna zoom out from your question, and I'm going to ask this in a more global, beyond cars sense. I'm sorry, it sounds like I'm preaching here, but just follow me for a second. You're talking about these companies, your perception of them, and where you also think they are now, and the two are at conflict. And I'm going to ask you this question. Can companies change? Next thought. Can culture change? Mm-hmm. Think about the things that were okay in culture 30 years ago or 50 years ago that are not acceptable now, and vice versa. Can people change, Adam? Can people grow?
Thought-provoking.
Because here's my next real thought.
Okay.
We as humans are creatures of pattern and association.
Yeah.
So we're categorizing creatures. We are constantly going along, trying to categorize the things around us, put them in little brain file folders so they all make sense. The problem is that once we believe something very absolutely about something, whatever it is, it's really hard to change our mind because that got filed already. That is under this. Mm. That topic means like this, and it goes under this subtopic, and it's in these things I either love or I hate, or maybe I don't care about, or I haven't even paid attention to. It's one of these categories. That got filed already. So if you run into a place in your life where you have to refile it, it hurts. You don't want to refile it.
Okay.
You categorized it already. You listed it, Adam. Mazda makes fun cars. Ford has a performance car for everybody, and Toyota makes stuff that is soulless, and I hate them. Fast forward 10 years, and you got to refile those companies. You got to rethink it.
But
But I submit to you, this is companies changing, culture changing, people changing. I'll give you the other flip side, and this is really hard. Can somebody you don't like do something genuinely nice for you and you accept it? Like, this is a person you don't want to be around. You don't like them. They've hurt you in the past. And they offer something genuinely nice. I know I do it. You go, what's the catch?
Yeah.
But what if
we all say that.
Of course we do. That, yeah. What if it's genuinely nice? What if in this moment that person has been genuinely nice to you? Can you accept it? So my big thrust to you here, Adam, and all of us listening, and myself and everybody, is we have to leave the door open for new information. And we have to be open enough for the things we love to come to us from avenues we didn't expect. People we don't like, companies we swore off of. And I also think in general, and this is, I'm really simplifying a very big issue. We need to, with our time and our dollars, reward the things we think are good.
That's really excellent.
And that comes down to, that company makes good sports cars now. I'm looking for a sports car. I should buy that company's good sports car. The fact they didn't make one 5 years ago, don't care. Buy one now.
Adam, it's okay if the company comes out with the new product, the new sports car, and everybody agrees it's excellent, but you still don't like it. Don't feel forced
absolutely.
And obligated because the reviews are glowing up one side and down the other, because media can be biased too. I know that's news.
Whoa, really?
I know it's news.
That's crazy.
Us car enthusiasts in car journalism can be biased too. Everybody thought the 2003 Cayenne would sink the company.
You're right. You're right. Absolutely.
Porsche prints money because of that in the Panamera.
Yeah, yeah.
And they keep pushing these other products and everybody's like, yeah, but 911 and Cayman over here, right? Let's keep hammering
on that. We make a Macan and we make a Cayenne. We make SUVs here at Porsche. And now we make electric versions of them or hybrid versions of them. Don't you want to come to Porsche? Jump 40 years back and tell some 911 enthusiast 40 years ago, Porsche is a company that makes electric and hybrid powered SUVs. you would probably kill them with the words.
Todd and I never thought of ourselves as being in the travel business.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
And I'm not saying here's the direction, the new direction, but we've certainly added that as an element.
Absolutely.
And we found a love for it and success doing it and an ability to make new friends and share with everybody these wonderful trips that tie into driving. It in no way means we're going to quit making content because that's the primary business. But we found the travel element added so much richness to the Everyday Driver brand, and now the Hooked on Driving brand adding yet another facet of what we love about the driving community to encourage car manufacturers. Yes, please keep building those awesome sports cars. I almost don't care what price level they're at, because people who do buy them need a venue to come drive them on track and come extract the most performance, get better as a driver. And by the way, it's fun. What we're doing is
crazy
over here.
That's bizarre.
I realize that. I thought of Nissan as you were talking.
Okay.
I've always associated Nissan performance, Skyline, GTR,
yes. Leaf.
Leaf. Versa. How contrived. How dare you? Maxima with a CVT, CVT everything, and then the R35 GTR is like makeup and straps right now. It's being held together by
Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross. How could we burn all of our history to the ground at once? Let's put all the names on it.
The Z car, I wanted it to be different, but they didn't make it different enough. And it's powerful, but it's not the lightweight, amazing. It's not the Supra. It's not, in my mind, really competitive with where it needs to be, with what the hallowed name Z needs to be. On the other hand, everybody's kind of like, the C8 Corvette's okay. C8 Corvette's really great, and they changed a lot, and that was a huge step for GM to change the Corvette into a mid-engine car and spawn this whole new generation of absurd horsepower cars. The Zero One is coming, and it's going to be more, better, It's the specs on that are absurd, but amazing. This car still meets what its core audience is, and it's cool enough to attract younger buyers. Is that okay? Hey, is that okay? Are we allowed to do that? I think so. Nobody's stopping us. I think it's okay. I think that's what all these car companies are doing, and especially with regulations of every kind all over the world being pushed and pulled by politicians and some car companies getting CEOs that bread and butter models matter to them. Like, well, we want to make money doing this. And
they're
then,
not car people, but we got to fix the balance sheet. There's a great example.
Yes.
You have people that have come from other industries to quote unquote fix a car company, or Akio Toyota, who comes from racing. Watch what happens.
It's almost like every Toyota model has been fixed is the wrong word, but they're crushing it with everything. And we talk about Toyota a lot, and it's genuine too. Everyone we drive is sort of like, they knocked this one out of the park too. They're listening to their customers.
They're everything really they make is at least competitive, and some of it is truly great, which is very interesting. The other thing I want to say here, Adam, is that what you're saying about all these companies shifting around, I hate to bring it back to this, but you've said this a lot of times, Paul, and it's true. It's the follow the money concept. Every one of these companies is changing things. They're making decisions based on where are we going to make money. And I hate to say this next thing, but it's so true. And you guys listening are the exception to what I'm about to say. Generally, people don't like driving. This is the culture that got overly excited about not having to drive anymore. That's why for 5 years, all anybody wanted to talk about outside of car culture was cars are about to be all electric and autonomous, which frankly, at the time was being used as buzzwords for don't worry, you don't have to drive at all anymore. And those of us that like to drive are going, excuse me, what about those of us that like it? Now, those of us that like it don't like it because we're sitting in a commute. In a stop and go commute, I'm perfectly happy to not be driven and not hear or smell anything. So an electric autonomous pod for a stop-and-go commute so I can do something else is fine. But you know what? That was never driving.
Just thinking about Volkswagen.
You just keep circling back to Volkswagen.
Well, they got slapped. Deservedly so. But look what Dieselgate did to their product lineup. They got slapped. They were the dog that did not get a treat.
You're right.
They have changed their entire lineup to the point where there are two performance versions, two fun-to-drive cars in their lineup. Does Volkswagen sell and market cars predicated on the concept of fun? What is the Volkswagen theme? Mazda had Zoom Zoom, BMW had Ultimate Driving Machine. Those were seared into our brains.
Volkswagen has diesel what?
Diesel, I can't even pronounce that.
EVs.
What is
Electrify
the whole
America.
Volkswagen? What is it? I feel like they're adrift. They haven't settled on, you know what, performance or, you know what, yeah, efficiency, but we're going to be the leaders. They're just sort of like, yeah, we got one of those two and we got a big SUV to cover that market segment. We've got an offering for that market segment and we've just got a, you know, offerings in all these markets and maybe they're good, maybe they're bad. At least we've made something. Now, they're a big enough car group where all their sub-brands are very focused. Porsche,
yes,
and, you
true,
know, all those
true, true. Yeah, yeah.
High-end brands, especially Audi. But
good.
What does the Volkswagen car lineup and the SUV product lineup do?
That's good.
I can't say it's attractive.
Well, but the point you're making, though, is what would be in the world of BMW, the ultimate driving machine, or Mazda Zoom Zoom, or whatever, what would be the driving subtitle of Volkswagen? And it's hard to pin down.
I don't know.
I hear you.
But what if a new CEO came in and said, look, we're going after, and kind of do the Akio Toyota thing. And every one of their vehicles was a standout in that category. It's not necessarily, racing by any means, but
maybe
some racing trickles in and it's some off-road racing or something. Motorsports definitely influences that, especially for in-car enthusiasts. And I think that's where you're going with your statement about them earning your dollars. And to earn their dollars, what is it? Is it, it's the same thing that every other consumer wants. Value for money, safety, amenities, comes in the color I like, the seats fit my body, this is a comfortable place to be, I can see out of it, I can see myself owning that, I've always kind of dug the brand, and I finally can afford a insert car brand here. But beyond that, what are the surprise and delight things? It's the cars that are built like these collaborations, these ones that are the lost leaders that, you know what, we hope to break even on these, but at least we did it. Those are the brands that are thinking differently.
Keep in mind that Toyota sells an average of 500,000 RAV4s a year, and they were willing to accept a few thousand super sales and call it a success.
But yet we think of like Toyota, Supra. Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, and the 86 is, we love it, obviously. The GR Corolla, we're big fans of. None of these are going to sell volume.
No.
None of them are.
No.
When you're selling nearly a half, it's like 450-something thousand. When you're selling nearly a 500,000 RAV4s, I'm amazed you cared to make something that's selling in the thousands. I mean, thankfully they are.
Right.
And that's true. Look, this is true of, you know, Mazda sells the MX-5, which is a bit of the standout in their lineup now, but can we believe they're still selling the MX-5?
Mm-hmm.
That's astonishing. In a great way, it's astonishing. So I'm glad it exists.
We've been through all the phases of all the cup holders, all the doors, all the doors and how they open to
I
fit
hear you.
Your
yeah.
life.
That's good.
Model Xs to minivan doors, sliding doors to all the doors. What else do families need? Have we not like reached pinnacle minivan? Like surely we've met all the consumer needs right now and it's just coming in a different color and shape next year, right? But keep all those same amenities that we've figured out. What other features can we add that will serve families better? I think we're there. Are we not there?
I can't believe the Honda VAC didn't survive.
I agree.
Anyway,
what
was
up with that?
That seemed obvious, wasn't it? Yeah.
What else can we do? But come back to the fact that we spend a lot of time in our cars, and it's got to be cool and fun and beautiful and great to drive. Why can't every model, large to small, be that way? I feel like Nissan is going in the wrong direction. They've had some real standouts, and they're making money with car models that they changed the foundation and made that better and reskinned it, and it's good. Pathfinder, Frontier, those kind of things. But their Halo stuff, maybe the new GTR will wow all of us and we'll be back to 2008 and like, oh my gosh, the GTR is $80,000 and it crushes everybody again. Is that time in the past too, though?
That's a good question. Look, the big thrust, Adam, is I want you to ponder refiling things. And we say it a lot, but if we don't buy fun cars when they're new, it's happened over and over and over again. The manufacturers will stop making that fun car.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Whatever car you're looking for, and wherever it's listed, You'll find it with AutoTempest.com. AutoTempest.com brings together results from all the top used car listing sites online to save you time and help you find the perfect car. It even lets you compare with nationwide results from Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist, not just your local area.
Plus, you can now get email alerts for your search, so you're sure to never miss a thing. You can even price and find new cars from nearby dealers. That's why AutoTempest is now the official sponsor of all of our test drive videos. We use it to search for new cars or used cars wherever they are.
When you're doing your drive homework, you're chasing the next family car, or just browsing so you can see what's available, go to AutoTempest.com/everyday so they know we sent you. AutoTempest. All the cars, one search. Jake M. is in Idaho looking for a sporty commuter car for his daily 100-mile drive.
Wow, I like this.
Jake is currently in the market for this fun and sporty daily commuter. See, back to fun. Fun and sporty.
Yes. Well, listen to Jake's car lineup, though. His current stable and the car he's looking to get rid of is his 2019 Honda Civic hatchback with a CVT. He dislikes it very, very much, but it is the right commuter because this is the rest.
He used emojis to let us know that.
Yes, this is the rest of the stable. The 2014 F-150 5-liter, the 1999 Subaru Outback Sport, which is the winter beater, the Pro Street Style 1980 El Camino, which he sent a photo, and it is nuts. A 1984 Pontiac Firebird that is a mid-9-second drag car, so we know the kind of fast that Jake enjoys. And he's currently in process on a race car build of a 1968 Chevelle.
Pop so, a shoot at a red light.
Seriously. Absolutely. Be careful of Jake in a straight line. Anyway, so he used to have, in the process of owning multiple cars, a 1992 Ford Exploder. That's his spelling, not mine. He said, despite his efforts, it refused to die. A 2010 Subaru Impreza, and he did briefly have a 2015 Subaru BRZ manual. The car going now is the Civic. I want to review. The F-150 stays. The 99 Subaru Outback Sport stays. The Pro Street Style El Camino with the crazy paint job and massive back wheels stays. The 1984 Pontiac Firebird that does a mid-9-second drag stays. And there's a 1968 Chevelle. It's the commute car we're solving here.
He's a hot rodder. He says he'd like something with two doors and comfortable seats because he might be 32 years old, but his back is about 50.
What's happened there? Sorry to hear it.
We're not sure. He would like it to be a 2+2, but that's not a deal breaker. Power to quickly blast past the combine tractors.
I like it.
And he does love a good blue paint job. And the cars that are on his radar include the Camaro SS1 LE, the BMW M240i, and the C63 AMG. All cars I know you'd love. If you haven't driven them, please go drive them. They're all slightly different. They've got good flavor.
Yeah, they're excellent.
I like what you're thinking. He's got a budget of $60,000, but for a special car, he can push the Paul limiter to $75,000. Jake, I have choices for you. Because you said your back was bad. We don't know why, but what do we always run to is seats from BMW and Volvo.
That's good. That's
I like your ideas about the 2 Series or the 3 Series. Jump in there. You could go larger. However, it's going to be a bigger, heavier car.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
The 2 Series. You could go after a 2 Series right now. That M240i has loads of power. BMW totally.
It's surprisingly good. Yeah,
thing.
They do.
Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about Supra. I mean, you didn't mention a Supra. You always also get that BMW engine in there, which is excellent to drive. Could it be that? I don't know if that's too small for you, but it's a nice car. It's a nice compromise in there. Manual, automatic, doesn't matter. Also, Volvo S60 or V60, those are not two doors, but seats. I'm thinking about seats. I'm thinking about your back. But I have two wild cards that I want you to think about because Let's throw all that out. Your car history, you're a hot rodder.
Yes, agreed.
So let's go to the company that makes hot rods. Wildcard number one is the Cadillac CT4 V Blackwing. Ooh. The 2022 and 23 model cars are going for $50,000 to $60,000.
Wow.
On Auto
That's
Tempest
a lot of car.
Right now, I checked. You've got
That's
your
a lot of car
choice.
For the money. That's very good.
I found them as low as $50,000.
Wow.
With 40,000 miles.
I am tempted by that. I don't have the money, but I'm tempted.
$55,000 for a Blackwing with like 14,000 miles.
Okay. $55,000 Blackwing. Or used Alfa Quadrifoglio. I am in a ponderance
That's
right now.
That's also a great choice.
Wow, interesting.
You
I
said 2+2,
okay,
but
right, yeah, yeah.
Four doors. Mm-hmm. But wild card number two, I think it's it done. It's not a 2+2. It is the C8 Corvette. And the reason I suggest that is because it's got cylinder shutoff. GM claims up to 26 miles per gallon on the highway. You're doing 100 miles. The Corvette that we have for the show has the base seats, Jake. and they're excellent. Mm-hmm. Every time I get in them, we think, man, these seats feel great. And they're the base seats, just straight. They're not even the second upgrade on that. And I think if you're rocking a C8 Corvette, it keeps it in that GM family that you love so much. It's got the cylinder shut off. It's a sports car. And I could see you commuting with a 6.2 liter V8, cylinder shut off,
yeah,
decent gas mileage, and I think you'd have loads of fun driving that. The seats are standout.
Interesting. You and I went similar places, but not identical.
He's a hot rodder. Get a Corvette, but it's good. C8 Corvette, and with your budget, I think you could do it.
Interesting. I started down one pathway because I was reading through the email, and then I got to the things were on his radar and went, no, that's not right. But I got going to walk down that path anyway. And then I sniper shotted.
Awesome.
Jake, you said originally blue paint job. This is where my brain went originally was I'm reading along. Blue paint job, 2+2 with power to pass. And I went, Veloster N. Makes it in a great blue.
Yeah.
You're commuting. Good power to pass. Keep a lot of money in your pocket. But then I read your choices, Camaro SS1 LE, BMW M240, and C63 AMG, and I went, probably not a Veloster, but that's interesting. And then I thought about your history, and I thought it, Paul and I went somewhere similar, but here's where I landed. 60K, maybe as much as 75. You can get one of these cars for that or less. Corvette C7 Grand Sport.
That's also really good.
Magna Ride.
Oh, yeah.
Great seats. The C7 actually had solid seats. The C6 didn't. By C7, the seats get good. C7, they get solid.
Yeah, yeah.
But Magna Ride is the major thing for your long commute.
Yeah.
It's not a 2+2, but with cylinder to shut off and the tall gearing, that car will go 30 miles the gallon.
That's tempting.
Room, space, good seats, big hatchback, Corvette C7 Grand Sport Magna Ride. I feel like that also would look good with the rest of your lineup too. It just feels like that car fits your lineup. So as soon as I discovered that, I was like, that's my sniper shot. It's interesting you went C8, but I'm staying C7 Grand Sport.
Every time I drop into the seats, I'm going, these are sweet. They feel great.
That is a fantastic cross-country car.
Jake, you've got some shopping to do, some driving to do. Let us know what you end up getting. If you've got a debate like Jake's, write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com for all your Topic Tuesdays, car conclusions, and car debates.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Got great questions from you guys. Thank you so much. Anthony Zerg writes to us on Facebook, whose daughter is writing a high school paper in critical thinking class.
Okay.
She needs to write either for or against autonomous cars. Anthony is proud that she's against, with two key arguments. Number one, the human element needed to make crucial split-second decisions as opposed to a pre-programmed black-and-white coding code stack do the decision-making for you.
Okay.
And number two, the sheer pleasure you get from the act of driving. And personal pleasure cannot be discounted or downplayed.
Okay.
I like that she's writing this, and I like that she's using those thinking skills to think through. I mean, ultimately, you're teaching her to arrive at the fact that driving is fun. That's why we car enthusiasts mess around with cars so much. We buy them and sell them and drive them and take them to track and talk about them and
talk about them on this podcast twice a week.
Products
it's awesome.
For them.
I love it.
And
yes.
We just, they drive our lives.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people ask me, do you ever get tired about talking about cars? And I think, you know, I guess I don't. I guess I don't. I'm so passionate about it, but I feed my other interests too. You guys know my other interests. You know Todd's other interests. We feed those as much as we can too for a nice balance. But I like that she's using these skills, and we have continued to run into the autonomous cars argument. And I do see an argument for, and I'm specifically thinking my father, who from a disabled standpoint could really use that. If autonomous cars were to the point where the general public could trust them, I would have no problem putting him in one, and he would be freed up to go run his own errands and do his own thing without relying on caregivers or anything like that. And it's not just him. There's millions of people worldwide that could benefit from the autonomous kinds of things that vehicles that could free people. And really cars is freedom. That's what my mom told me when I was 16, she said, you've got a bike, you've got your mountain bike, but you're going to discover that cars just represent freedom.
Mm.
And I never thought about it that way. And that's so amazing to me to continually feel that. So that would be my argument for autonomy. And we will see some of that that will continue to be worked on. That is kind of the holy grail. It's the Mount Everest of hacks. It's Mount Everest of coding stacks.
Stop.
But to make a machine think for itself and follow the rules that are there. Although I did just see an article, you guys probably saw it too. Some guy wearing a stop sign on his t-shirt fooled a Waymo into stopping. He just had the stop sign printed on his t-shirt on his chest.
Interesting.
And the car read the symbol and stopped, and he's fooling it. I'm sure coders didn't think of that one. There's still a lot that they don't think of, but I like what the technology can do to free disabled people. But that's not for everybody, and it doesn't take away from the fact that driving is awesome and fun.
Jorge on Instagram says, for towing a car, so towing a car with another vehicle, does it have to be done by a pickup or a body-on-frame SUV? Jorge, no. It has to be done by something with a tow rating that is enough to tow the car and the trailer. And that's going to be where it's going to get harder. What car are you towing? Towing a Lotus Elise or a Miata is very different than towing a large other sedan. So depending on what you're towing, the more you get up to a heavy load behind it, then you have to wind up with a big pickup or body-on-frame SUV because, again, all of them can like tow a house. It really depends on what your tow vehicle is. But what I love about going to Europe from a towing perspective is the stuff you see towing things. It's never the stuff we use to tow here.
It's true.
There's little, I mean, granted, I realize people are towing caravans that are made out of paper mache. I get that. But you see little tiny hatchbacks, tiny little things with tow hitches. I'm not sure in the U.S. you could go into a store and they would actually, with a straight face, put a tow hitch on a hatchback. And in Europe, they're just like, well, I'll just tow with this. I have it. So check the tow rating. That's key.
Nick Lancey on Instagram says, assuming you had the space, would you prefer a garage of 12 cheaper cars that each had a super specific use case?
Okay.
Or one three-car garage of more expensive vehicles than you need to balance multiple roles? There's a lot of cars that can do a lot of things. I mean, the advent of electronic suspension control that you change from comfort to sport has really made the more expensive vehicles quite viable for being a comfortable car, and then you can take them on track. C8 Corvette's one of them, all the European cars. You can actually make them comfortable, and I do tend to lean towards the more expensive cars just because that's my
taste. That's interesting.
And my thinking.
There's a surprise.
You said, assuming you had the space, so 12 cheaper cars, that is pretty tempting. Down to it, I probably take the 12 because you can get very specific. You can have, this is for certain types of tracks. This is for other types of tracks. This is the grocery getter. This is the long haul car. This is the off-roader. This is, okay, I could see it. 12 cars then.
That's funny. Nick, I'm going to take the other part of this because I'll be honest with you. It would be difficult for me to think of 12 specific enough uses to have 12 specific enough cars. So in that regard, of your options, I would go the three-car garage because I think I could take three and split it up enough. I'm thinking like something like my Elise, very focused, something like a Alfa Quadrifoglio, a mid-level do-everything fun sedan, and then some really nice SUV, and I could cover most anything.
Like
I could
a Cayenne?
Maybe, but something, you know, we'll see. So, I mean, I might go, hey, for all you know, I'll go Ram TRX and just really throw you off. Well, it's really covered.
See, okay,
anyway, the point I'm making is I could probably do it with three. The reality is the answer for me isn't the 12 cars because I can't think of those specific uses, but I think if I really ponder it, it's probably four, maybe five cars, and I would cover every specific use I would actually do.
You've got to touch on Lucas 5F's question about what age do you believe kids should start learning to drive? Do we think kids should start on things like carts before they start learning regular size cars? Lucas knows driving culture can be very different in other countries, and since we've done many Germany trips, what age do you hear kids start to drive in Germany? Do they start on carts, bikes? Well, in the UK, they start on carts when they're like a year and a half old, like 18 months, and it's like, you're going to be an F1 star. Here, start driving.
My son is karting now, so I find it myself at racetracks. Again, not for the Hooked on Driving, but actually at racetracks for karting for him. It's actually really cool. But what I find hysterical is the tiny kids in carts that are not even the size of a coffee table. Like little kids that are barely to my waist.
That's crazy.
Fully kitted out because mom and dad are into it too. So, and then I see them hustling a cart around and just think, already? I think with back roads and parking lots as soon as they are big enough to actually work a car. Most cars, the bottom of a car setup is like 4'9", 4'10", somewhere in that height. So let's just say when they're 5 feet tall, start. I'm not saying let them take you to the grocery store. I'm talking about a parking lot in the middle of nowhere. Now, the key thing here is they have to have interest. My son has had interest since he was a fetus. I mean, not really, but close to it. As soon as he got past, I guess it was like 4 or 5 when we left the construction stuff phase, because there's that phase in kids where like construction is like the greatest thing ever. As soon as he left the construction phase, it's been cars. So as soon as he was 4'10", I was like, okay, we were in the middle of a back road one day, and I was like, all right, you want to try it? So, you know, you've got to be in the right location. But if there's interest, why not start early? Because they're going to be terrible. But if they have, I feel like, these spaced out opportunities as they develop to understand the reality of it, because they've been in the backseat and it's the simplest thing ever. They don't think anything of it. And what I feel like happens is there's the instant jump in when they get to driving age. And I've known plenty of kids that when they get to driving age, suddenly feel shockingly overwhelmed. Even if they were interested, it's just, it's so much. It's too close to a switch flip. So I feel like brief opportunities can allow them to kind of not be terrified of it, even though they have no idea what they're doing and they can't be on a public road. And then by the time you get to them being old enough, they've at least handled a vehicle. And now we get serious.
It's a little bit of micro thinking on the larger scale, but from a kid's standpoint, I like that kids want to learn how to drive, and it's a life skill. So I look at it through the lens of life skill, from tools to cars to you name the machine, you know, when appropriate, of course. I'm not saying, here's a bulldozer, son.
Yeah.
Go nuts on the, wait.
when my son was, I think he was 11, we were on a trip, that big road trip we took with the Lotus Elise.
Oh, yeah, right.
He and I took this really cool road trip. He was 11. We wound up in Colorado, in Ouray, and we rented a Jeep, and we did a back road. And we're coming down the back road. I'd done all the serious driving. We're coming down a back road. We're now on literally like a dirt fire road getting back to the main road. We had a little bit of distance, and I said, do you want to drive? And he was like, really? So then he starts driving, and we're creeping. We're creeping in a Jeep down a back road. And then it dawns on him that people are coming up the hill driving.
Never thought about.
But he's like, Dad, what if they see me? And I said, first off, son, they're not going to care. Secondly, if they do care, we are so far from a place that they could go to find someone who could do anything. If that person even wants to come back, by the time they get back here, nothing could be done. No one's going to care. But the funniest moment of all of this was the moment when we actually passed another Jeep. He did just fine. Again, it's off-roading. We're going walking pace. A Jeep went the other direction. He looked away from the person in the other Jeep. He looked at me with this like, please don't look at me. Look at his face. I'm like, buddy, you're fine. And please look at the road.
Ted Theologan asks, what do we want to focus on Spa and the Ring when we go back later this year? Definitely smoothness. All the things that track drivers think of is inputs, brake release, smoothness, where my eyes are at. But I feel like it's specific corners and having a comfort level to carry speed through specific corners. Niki Lauda corner is one of mine. Certainly the Ring. There's never a point where anybody can say about the Nürburgring, I think I've mastered it. Hey, everyone, come look. I think I've done it.
People like Ron Simons that have lived there for 30 plus years, maybe, but short of that, I promise you don't know the Ring.
Maybe factory test drivers for all the car companies they're throwing the cars around and they're not paying attention to the corners. They're trying to pay attention to the car and what it feels like in a particular corner. So that's a skill level that is otherworldly, and that's amazing.
There's so much speed available on that track that I am not utilizing. I am so aware of it. And even when I do a lap that's not very good, I have fun on that track.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Thank you so much for all your questions. We really appreciate it. Looking forward to hearing from you. When you write to us at everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, go to hookedondriving.com to locate a track day near you. We're looking forward to having you at one of our track days for Hooked on Driving. And please let us know. We love feedback. You can write to us here. But we're also looking forward to your topic Tuesdays, your car conclusions, car debates as usual. And anytime anything strikes you, drop us a line. Thank you guys for being a part of the show, and rate and review it when you get a chance.
We'd love that. We really appreciate it.
Please share the show. That's how we gain this enthusiast community and share how much fun driving is. We're always looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.